This thing, this creature, seems to feed on energy.
This thing is from another world. My world.
I've killed things from other worlds before.
The following program contains mature language and spoilers. Listener discretion advised.
Illegal Machine.
That's me.
Mr. Fix-It.
That's me.
You both are on Roll Spine Podcast. Most especially, though, the Marvel Superheroes Podcast.
Yep.
Where randomly you decided to cover Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice. So you guys saw the movie because I abstained.
Well, you did send me a text one time saying, hey, it's at the Dollar Cinema. I thought that was an invite.
Yeah, no, I was actually, I was thinking about doing that and that changed my mind. You guys have done a podcast on this movie. And then one of our friends, Ryan Daly, KK Count Druncula, he did one as part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network's Film and Water Podcast. And then a few weeks after that, he did another one with his buddy Nathaniel Wayne, who's part of the Council of Geeks, for one of his podcasts. So this is a movie that even within our immediate circles has been covered to death. I managed to hold off for, it came out in late March, so
25th.
April, May, June. I lasted over 3 months without seeing this movie. The plan was I was going to go and see it at a dollar show because I wanted to give the producers of the movie as little of my money as possible. But then they had announced the whole Ultimate Edition. So I'm like, okay, cool. Well, I'll just wait for the Ultimate Edition. I was going to rent it. But then it's not even coming out on a physical medium until mid-July.
Yeah.
And it's probably not going to be available for rental until sometime after that.
August, probably.
Yeah. So that seemed a little excessive. And Max specifically really wanted to go ahead and get this out of the way so he never has to see this movie again, correct?
Correct.
So we all decided to chip in $5 a piece. My girlfriend contributed to that as well. And then after a half hour of the movie, she tapped out saying how terrible it was. But we went ahead and we watched all 3 hours and 2 minutes of the Ultimate Edition of this movie. And mainly, besides getting to see the full overview of the film, it's because I hadn't seen it and you guys wanted to get responses. So I'll start off by saying, while the movie is not good, it wasn't nearly as terrible as I thought it was going to be. Because I've had so many people tell me how bad this movie is, I really expected it to cause me physical pain to watch it. I thought I was going to have a tummy ache 30 minutes into this thing. And actually, I think I made it through the better part of an hour before I started watching the clock on how much longer this thing had left in it. It was surprisingly tolerable for most of the movie, with moments that I couldn't quite handle. But it wasn't nearly as bad as I thought. I am really glad that we watched it in a home environment, and I'm really glad that we took long breaks in between hour-long blocks of this thing. I hated that the movie felt the need to start with a recap of the Wayne origin again. It makes me sad that known actors, Maggie from The Walking Dead and the comedian, had to die just to go through the origin again. It bothered me that it was so fetishized, especially the pearls, you know, falling into the sewer like rain and all that kind of stuff. Not a fan of that. And then when it's like intercutting the origin with Bruce Wayne running through the woods and then he falls through a wooden trap, and then he's in a bat cave and the bats circle around him and lift him up the light, and it turns out that that's a dream. That was kind of confusing and, more importantly, just dumb. I didn't find that to be metaphorically valuable in any way.
So I tell you, you didn't like the recurring themes of that type of
visual
medium.
Why was there a title card announcing the secret title of this movie being When Mankind Meets the Superman, or whatever the hell that card was? What was that about?
It seems like they're doing these, like, this timeline of contact with these metahumans, and that's humans make contact with the Superman. It's like, but they sort of seem to forget to do that. Like, I guarantee you, they're not going to do that shit in the other movie.
Yeah, and didn't they already do that in Man of Steel? I mean, that's when they made the contact. Is it that the Batman is making contact with the Superman, and that man meets? I don't know what that's supposed to be. Well, it's like a Wes Anderson card thing. Why is that in this movie? I thought, well, maybe they would do like a chapter breaks or something to show these significant occurrences. That was a weird stylistic choice. I didn't understand that.
I think it's supposed to show you when the overlap of the two movies is, but you do the card. I mean, we don't need the card to know that. I thought the pearls were from Dark Knight Returns, wasn't it? Hey, where's your Dark Knight Returns, motherfucker?
You found it?
Okay.
Dude, that's like in every fucking Batman origin story. I love video games.
Well, if I recall correctly, the pearl necklace bursting and the young Bruce Wayne meeting the bat, specifically a demonic bat, is straight out of Dark Knight Returns.
But why was it in this movie?
Because Zack Snyder can't achieve full erection without a Frank Miller book being in one hand.
Because because it's an R-rated retelling, you know, with sex and real violence, it just actually aesthetically hit me right on the nose, and I just really enjoyed it.
Man of Steel. Did you guys talk about Man of Steel the previous one? Back in the day,
no, Man of Steel yet? No, I only got to watch up to when we were watching it on your phone waiting for the movie to start. Okay.
So you've seen Man of Steel.
Yeah.
And what did you think of that one? Yeah. I actually liked it okay. I forgave it a lot of its needs to turn Superman into one of the X-Men mutants, and I forgave a lot of its excesses in imagery. Zack Snyder was shooting a commercial for HEB or something, and I even forgave it its desaturation. It was the 45 minutes of disaster porn,
yeah,
and really funky cartoony CGI. That's what I couldn't really handle. And so, you know, the whole last, like, again, 30-45 minutes of that movie is just Superman fighting Kryptonians and then blowing the heck out of cities without acknowledging the obvious human cost that would represent.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get to see all that 9/11 imagery in this movie,
even turned up to the nth degree.
One of the first things we see is Bruce Wayne driving through the city trying to reach the offices of Wayne Tech, and he calls some supervisor guy named Jack in that movie and has mm-hmm. him evacuate the building. And then, like, there's some message that he's trying to relay to Jack that he can't get to him, and I think that's part of the reason why he's driving through the building. And so the building collapses with Jack in it. Why didn't Jack leave the building? And who is Jack, and why should I care that Jack is dead?
I'm assuming, well, I'm not even going to assume, I would assume that this is going to be in one of his prequel movies, right?
Maybe.
So they're going to build Jack up in a later time so it matters that he died?
I feel like they're going to do that with a lot of these movies that we haven't seen.
So they're doing it backwards?
I feel like they're going to do that.
Ooh.
Well, the Affleck movies, he's got to be younger in the Affleck, right?
I would think that it would be.
I thought he would go older, yeah. I would figure he would keep playing up the older, gruffy Batman.
Well, maybe do some flashbacks, but you'd want to progress past this point, right? You wouldn't want to do like Indiana Jones where all of a sudden there's a prequel.
But the thing is, they're already doing a prequel with Wonder Woman.
Is it a prequel?
Isn't it?
I mean, she's going to be. No, technically, yeah, the sequences in which take place in the past, in the year 1918.
But isn't it that a majority? Ain't that majority of the movie?
It might be. I think it's probably kind of like a Captain America thing where it's going to start there, but I don't know that it's going to necessarily end there. I'm not sure they're going to end the entire movie in 1918.
Cap started there the entire movie.
She's dormant. She's dormant until this movie.
But I mean,
a block of ice,
basically.
Huh?
Don't you think they're going to explain?
Well, she said she had that one line, "For 100 years, I left mankind because of the horrors." And I'm like, dude, you lived through like Greek wars and shit that were way worse. Like, yeah, they shot each other with bullets and chemicals, but back then they like beheaded each other and shoved spikes up their asses and hung them up. And like, they did some really fucked up shit. So,
one thing that I'm not sure about, I'm assuming if she's lived 100 years and not age, I think they're going to take their cues from the television show where she's apparently an immortal who's been around for hundreds of years.
No.
It's not actually true of the comic book, though. At least not that I'm aware of. I was under the assumption that not only was she living at a normal age rate, but when she left Paradise Island, she was supposed to start aging normally anyway. That was part of the price of her leaving her people.
I always assumed she was like thousands of years old.
If I remember correctly, the TV show had her at like 500 to 1,000 years old, something like that. So anyway, so she left Man's World because she wasn't happy about that. We're going to see what happened that made her so upset about Man's World in the prequel.
It's a man's world!
But I just can't.
They don't mean nothing.
I just can't see like her crying about mankind in like World War One or two.
Well, we'll worry about that whenever that movie comes out. Well,
Trench Warfare was pretty brutal.
Yeah, but
so was the ancient Greeks.
Yeah, I mean, they just literally marched arms into each other.
We're assuming we're going to see something in her movie that causes her to walk away. But that movie hasn't come out yet, so let's not judge her for that yet.
Yeah, we'll find
There's
her
There's plenty to judge her on in the movie.
Since they showed that she has a bank account in the modern world from which they're able to take a facial, you know, profile of her.
And a driver's license.
Yeah, and connect that to a picture from 1918. She must have been doing something in Man's World before, you know, Lex did what he did. So maybe, literally, it could be a prequel explaining why she was getting money out of an ATM.
So she gonna be like Highlander, where she's like an antiques dealer and she just has like shit from the past?
I think that's exactly what they're doing. I think she's supposed to be an antiques dealer.
They're stealing from Highlander. Yeah. Duncan MacLeod.
Oh. Connor MacLeod.
Oh, Connor MacLeod, my bad.
Connor wasn't an antique dealer.
Yeah, he was. He was an
No, they both were?
Well, no, Duncan wasn't.
Connor was. What was Duncan?
I thought Duncan
was. He too? I never really watched the show.
I watched a few episodes.
Yeah, I was more into the movies.
It doesn't matter.
So then that'll
be on our Highlander stream.
So, I mean, it would make sense why she would have money then.
They have to explain that at some point, so it's possible that the entire Wonder Woman movie will be a prequel.
Ooh, Nazi gold.
Why do they hate Jimmy Olsen so much? Because first they were going to turn him into Jenny Olsen in the first movie, and I guess that raise some hackles, so they decided, okay, well, we're just going to have Jenny Olsen be Jenny. And two movies in, we still haven't identified her beyond the name Jenny. And then they bring in Jimmy Olsen. He's a photographer in a war-torn country. It turns out he's actually a plant from the CIA, and they shoot him in the face. And we've established confirmedly that he's Jimmy Olsen. So why do they keep wanting to kill Jimmy Olsen? Why can't they do anything with the supporting character in these movies?
Why did they kill Robin? So I'm assuming sidekicks are just being wiped out right away.
I guess so.
So answered your question.
Yeah, so Snyder probably doesn't like sidekicks.
Yeah.
Okay. Why was Batman shown running along a roof inside of that warehouse?
Where you mean alien style? Alien style?
He looked like, no, what he looked like was Bram Stoker's Dracula.
I just assume he kind of...
He was like a skittering spider across, and then he like pulled wood and stuff too. Why did he like moving so fast? Like the wood was breaking around him, and he's just like, boo, boo, boo. Why is he a Spider-Man? Why does he move like that? And why did it look so terrible?
And why are you coming off so Andy Rooney? People won't get that joke. The point is, this movie made no sense so many times that you're trying to make sense out of something.
That's just it. More of it made sense than I was expecting.
Really?
Again, based on its reputation. Who decides that they want to see Batman skittering like a cockroach along
the
roof?
That was the least of this movie.
Yeah, dude, trust me. For me, my second viewing with Mac here, it got worse. Now, granted, the extra footage maybe explained parts that if you watched the theatrical one, you would have been like, what the? These small scenes answered it. And sometimes it was just complete scenes where it was an entire story arc that we never saw. Like the character made one, maybe a
just
speech.
Say what you're talking about, the African lady. You're talking about the African woman who gives the speech about the terrorists and Superman killing everybody, basically.
She only makes that one little speech and then you never see her again.
You never see that she was paid off by Luthor to lie to the government.
Like the whole setup.
And she knew who the Russian guy was.
Yeah,
all that's gone. None of that was in the movie.
So when we watch, I'm like, well, okay, that kind of makes sense.
No, in the movie, it doesn't make sense. The movie, you're like, who would really think that Superman killed all those guys? They all had gunshot wounds and the guy burned them. Except they didn't show them getting burned in the movie.
Yeah.
See what they explain is that apparently Lex Luthor has created this metal. It looks like a splinter, so you can't even tell that it's a bullet. And so his men are embedded with a group of terrorists in what appears to be an African nation. At the last moment, after Jimmy Olsen has been shot in the face, these guys turn on the Africans and shoot them dead with the funky bullets. Then they burn the bodies, apparently to make it look like they were burned through heat vision.
In the theatrical release, they don't show you burn them.
They don't show any of that. Yeah. So
they just show them get shot.
And then before Lois is killed by the rebel leader, Superman shows up and throws him through a wall and clearly kills that guy.
We said that he straight morted him.
The simple thing is, people in America don't give a fuck if somebody goes in and kills a bunch of terrorists. Nobody cares. Why would there be a congressional hearing over Superman killing terrorists when they had drones
I thought the whole thing was because of the drone. Because remember, Python, who wasn't in a movie either, is riding the horse with the crew. They're gonna
there's a CIA group that's been tracking them and comes in to try to save the day.
Yeah. So it didn't make sense to me that they were making a big deal of that when they were already sending in either they were gonna bomb the shit out of it with a drone or they're sending a hit squad to extract her. Right. So you had like one or the other.
The military wanted to send the drone in, but the drone was gonna just definitely kill Lois in the midst of everybody else.
And all the guys that they didn't know they were dead. Right.
And so they were trying to ride in. They couldn't beat the drone, but then Superman comes in, smashes the drone. Which was that in the movie?
No.
Okay.
There was no drone. There was no cavalry.
No Python. Yeah. So now you see we've lost how much? Like 5 minutes on just this one scene trying to make sense of why, what, and where is it going in this film.
So when you're watching the theatrical release, you're like, why do these people really think Superman killed all these people? And again, shouldn't that outrage be the 9/11 style murdering of Metropolis? Yeah. That should be the outrage against Superman.
Buildings coming out. I mean, you have that spacecraft just creaming through buildings.
Well, and he's using his laser vision cutting those buildings up, right?
I do have to say, I thought it was cool when the ship was passing through the city and just slicing through buildings. That
should have been the focus of why everybody's pissed off at Superman.
Yeah. They cut a whole lot of movie.
They contrived this whole stupid terrorist thing that isn't even believable, like, because people wouldn't care.
Yeah.
People don't care.
It's outside the U.S.
Why do they need that to happen to have a congressional hearing about Superman being reckless? Like, what the fuck? He blew up your largest city in the United States or wherever fucking Metropolis is. That's why you're mad at Superman. Why do you need terrorists in Africa to be killed? That's why you're upset at Superman.
It doesn't make any fucking sense. Well, the whole point is they're trying to create a conspiracy so that Lois has something to do in this movie.
Right.
Besides make bad decisions.
And they're trying to do Luthor's like this Machiavellian character.
They're trying to replicate what the Joker did in The Dark Knight.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's just, but it's really bad. Like,
yeah, it's well, see, I actually don't mind that aspect of it.
I don't know how you cannot not mind that. Yeah. We just complained about how stupid
I'm willing,
it is.
No, but I'm willing to let it go because I like that it gave Lois things to do. She's trying to figure out what the conspiracy is. She's found the bullet embedded in her book. She's the one who's following up on, you know, who would produce this? Why would they produce it? She's the one who is talking to the general from the Man of Steel movie and making sure that he has something to do as well.
So you're happy because it's busy work?
I like Amy Adams as Lois Lane. I think that she's well cast. I like that she's the intrepid reporter. I like that she does a good job of balancing needing Superman with being self-sufficient. And she's pig-headed, but she's not so much that you dislike her. So I think she manages the balancing act of making Lois Lane a heroine. She handles that very well. So I like that she had something to do with this movie. I like that somebody made a point of giving her things due, even though apparently they took most of that stuff out once it got to the theatrical release. They've got Jenna Malone in the movie playing Jeanette Clyburn, and all she's there to do is for Lois to run to her and get scientific data. And so that feels like a real waste of that actress, and I don't think she's particularly well cast in that role either. She doesn't look like the Jeanette Clyburn.
They cut that scene books. And it was perfectly fine too, because all she does is end up going in the theatrical release. She goes to the main dude, I guess.
Yeah.
And she goes, hey, I already had to check somewhere else. It's definitely a weird metal, but they didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. Which is exactly what they go talk to Jenna Malone, and she goes, I don't know what this is. I've never seen it before. And that's when the whole scene.
She's there for exposition.
But really, I mean, if you think about it, Superman never cared about Luthor through majority of the movie. He didn't care until the very end.
Yeah. Well, he didn't know that Luthor was even doing anything. But he wasn't aware. They blew him up. This is one of the problems I have, is the bullet, right? You're more than halfway through the movie. I don't think they explained very well what the significance of that was. They kept bringing up these hearings that Holly Hunter was concerned about the unilateral actions of Superman. And so she's having these hearings to look into his actions. But they never, to my mind, they didn't explain what she was upset about. I understand the unilateral action, but the specific notion of Superman being accused of killing these terrorists.
Yeah.
I didn't think that was communicated in the movie until more than halfway through that's the big sticking point. That's the thing that they're trying to hang him on, is that specific thing. So even as she's investigating the bullet, it's like, I don't know what this means necessarily, or at least I wouldn't have if I didn't already have the context of listening to a bunch of people gripe about it already on other podcasts. So I knew. But if I were going to this movie cold, I wouldn't know what the heck that was going on at all. I wouldn't know why they were doing it. So yeah, that was very confusing to me. I think you said some of these scenes were deleted. I like that Hunter actually has a point, I think, about the unilateral actions of Superman, that he needs to at least be reined in to some degree, or he needs to have some accountability for the actions he's taking without consulting anybody. So I thought it was interesting, because I actually kind of understood where she was coming from, and I don't know if that was in the theatrical version. I like that she is the one who stops Lex Luthor from bringing kryptonite into the country, because even though she's got issues with Superman, she's not willing to help Lex Luthor bring a device that she knows he's explicitly going to use to kill Superman, because Lex Luthor is so crazy pants in every single scene of this movie that it's obvious that he's not a reasonable human being that you could trust in any way, shape, or form. So she's actually like combating him. So I kind of like that. She wants to bring Superman to account, but she's also not just handing Lex Luthor the keys to the kill wagon, you know?
Yeah, except why does Lex Luthor need congressional approval to bring a mineral that he planned on smuggling into the country on the white Portuguese anyway?
But that's just it. They don't smuggle it into the country until after she denies him legal access.
No, Batman is talking about it. He's been researching it for a while.
The white Portuguese is bringing a dirty bomb into Gotham. He already knew they were transporting.
So and this is way before the committee, before way Luthor before. Even meets them. So he already had plans to bring it in.
Okay. So, all right.
It's fucking dumb. Yeah,
that's what I'm telling you, dude. That's why you're like, well, I can forgive. Dude, you can't forgive shit like that. Like, it makes no sense.
Basic logic escapes this movie. And unfortunately, they insert, like you said, well, you know, I wish they would have gotten to the Hunter congressional hearings quicker. Well, the reason why that seems like you kind of like, wow, that bullet stuff was way earlier, it's because they keep injecting this fucking diversion of trying to set up the JLA movie in the middle of this movie. Like, they just copied, they're like, well, we got to put this clip somewhere, paste it here randomly, the one-third mark, paste another chunk of it too, and it just spreads out an already shitty story, and it just knocks those chunks even further away, so you forget even more about why.
So then, the story becomes less coherent.
Did you guys manage to see any nipple when Lois Lane was in the tub?
I was going to ask you to rewind it.
I was trying.
It looked like it might have shown some.
Yeah, it got real close. Mr. Fix-It, you brought in one of the earliest, if not first, issues of Playboy without nudity, and it's interesting because it's still really close to showing nudity, so close that it's almost more provocative than actually just showing the nudity. Because when they show the nudity, it was always nice, sweet kind of thing, and now it's like they're trying to catch like their upskirts and stuff, it seems like. So it seemed like with Lois, they were being very artful and almost showing nudity, but I don't think they ever quite crossed the line, but they got so close so often.
Hey, when she moves to the edge of the tub, it gets really close.
Yeah. Hey, I was disappointed. It was supposed to be R-rated.
Yeah, I have to commend this movie.
It had an R-rating, I guess. Yeah. They could have shown
it. Had R-rating. Come on, just throw a tit out there, man.
But I have to commend this movie for the equal time, because this is a woman that's probably about 40 years old now, and then you've got these guys that are like really buff and like don't even look their age, and they're not, one of them's not even remotely 40, and the other one is just a little past. And you get to see Bruce Wayne naked in the shower. He's literally more naked than Lois ever is. And then you're seeing Clark Kent stripped down to his skivvies as well. So they made sure to have something for the guys and the girls. And I have to say I respect that. Okay. I did think it was funny, though, that you've got Henry Cavill jumping into a bathtub with a woman that's twice as old as the person he's actually dating in real life. I just couldn't help but I couldn't forget that when it was happening. Because you know he's dating like a 19-year-old girl.
All right.
Okay.
I'm just saying. I like that even though they only used it, I think, one time in the movie, I like that they used the term metahuman. Because I've always liked that term. It's a DC-specific term. And in recent years, especially around the time of the New 52, they started trying to call all the superheroes. And that's such a comic booky term, and that's fine. But not everybody who has metahuman powers is a superhero. So why don't you just call them metahumans? DC owns that verbiage, and it's so much better descriptor of all metahumans.
Yeah.
I like that when Clark Kent, who for some reason decides to put his memento board up with duct tape, he's got like a collage, like a teenage girl's bedroom wall. But one of the pictures does have a shot that looks like the cover of Action Comics number one in silhouette.
Oh.
So I like that. It's a nice little Easter egg.
Xenozoic Xenophiles,
a fan podcast devoted to the comic series Xenozoic Tales.
It's a post-apocalyptic adventure series filled with Cadillacs and dinosaurs.
I'm Ruth.
And I'm Darren.
We hope you'll join us as we discuss the stories, characters, and art in this excellent comic series from creator, writer, and artist Mark Schultz.
Xenozoic Xenophiles is available at podbean.com and on iTunes and Stitcher.
And find us at xenozoicxenophiles.com.
We want this to be a heavy, powerful movie. Let's pull everything that's topical.
So you think they're going for a shock factor?
Shove it down your throat.
Like shock factor?
We want to have people writing, putting the Superman, while you're talking about how he can be a messiah and how he's a Jesus Christ figure. And they're writing the Superman logo on the roofs of their homes during a flood. And they're reaching out to him as he floats down from the heavens with like a halo of light around him. All that shit made me nauseous, dude. And then there was the deleted scene where they've got Superman on fire with a bag on his head with a noose around him, and they show this shocked African-American family looking at each other, and I'm like, this movie fucking sucks. And Zack Snyder's just like, I'm telling you, dude, they went completely out of their minds in this film. Pick one thing that you have a weird biblical allegory deal. Don't throw everything. Don't have terrorists and suicide bombers. And
so they're trying to cover all their bases. All the bases.
They're stealing bases from everywhere and just throwing them all at you, trying to make some sort of relevant point to this movie when they're forgetting it's a stupid comic book movie.
True.
Come on, let's relax a little bit here. Like Civil War's got the one theme. This movie had Civil War and like 50 other things they all try to throw into it. Like you think
that's a desperate just trying to shove all this into a script and trying to find something to hook the audience with?
I think he thought he was making some sort of masterpiece, and in order to make some masterpiece that will literally like touch people, that's what you have to do.
They just bombard him with all these imagery.
Wow. Oh, I never thought about thought about him as a Christ figure. He's sacrificing himself for all of our sins, and we have the spear of destiny. And I mean, dude, everything is just shoving it down your throat. I think it is just in horrible, horrible taste. The second time around, it made me almost nauseous in some of those
things. That's why I'm telling you.
Obvious. Like, if you really thought, oh, no, he's really trying to get political with the Black Lives Matter. No, but he's doing that to try and just get somebody who can, maybe we can get them to see that in the movie, too. Let's just throw some shit in there for that, too. It's so superficial. It's garbage. Sorry. It's trash. Disgusting.
Well, let me throw this out there. Zack Snyder, one of the only movies, if possibly the only movie he's ever written that he also directed, was Sucker Punch.
And that's garbage.
Yeah, it's a terrible movie. And what's interesting about it, though, is it sold as like a girl power kind of movie. But it's actually deeply misogynistic. It shows a deep misunderstanding of women. Most of the heroines of the movie are raped and murdered before the end of the film. The main protagonist of the movie is lobotomized. And it takes a man to finally figure out that something's going wrong and start to unravel the circumstance. So a man ultimately saves the day in that movie. Spoilers. Don't ever see that movie. For the love of God, don't ever see Sucker Punch. This weekend, I saw the movie The Neon Demon by Nicholas Winding Refn. And it's got such similarities to Sucker Punch, including the heroine that's supposed to be so ethereal, so magnificent that people just like go, like lose their minds just at the sight of her because she's just such a potent entity. And that movie has a very similar trajectory to Sucker Punch. And it's also another movie where on the surface, you think it's feminist, you think it's pro-woman. It does pass the Bechdel test, I can tell you that much. But by the end, it's just gotten to be such a train wreck of a film, and it's such an empty, stupid message being delivered by the film. And what it reminds me of is punk rockers in the 70s drawing swastikas on a wall. They don't fully understand what the swastika means. They just get off on the rise. It gets out of people who do know what it means and get very upset seeing that imagery. And that's what this movie feels like. It's appropriating imagery that you know resonates with people without understanding why it resonates and understanding how to use it correctly. And so you're just throwing it out there to manipulate people's emotions, but you don't really know what you're doing. You've got the iconography down, but you don't have the substance of it, playing around with stuff that's bigger than you can really wrap your head around. Is that about right?
Would you say? Right. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So that's what I'm saying. If there is this religious conflict in people that, is he Jesus? You could have done a whole movie on that. And instead, they just sort of just sprinkle it. You know what I mean? Like you said, it's to try and get a rise. But really, that you could have made a perfectly valid Superman film about this debate inside of humanity. Is this guy from the heavens? That's compelling shit. This movie, it's none of that. It's none of it. It's completely wasted.
Trying
to go back to it over and over again, but I'm like, you're not focusing enough on it because you're too busy doing terrorist stuff and suicide bombing. Like, you're trying to hit all these little things, and it's just, you need to focus. That's what I'm saying. Civil War focused on the one conflict. The heroes are they out of control? Do they need to be regulated? Do not be regulated. This movie tried to hit everything. It tried to hit everything.
Even. It felt sometimes like they were going the Civil War route as well.
This movie came out for Civil War. I know the book came out first, but.
Yeah, but it felt like, you know, you had the two sides. Does the government need to get in there and ring in the heroes? And I felt that pretty heavy through the movie as well. I think that was the whole point of the Holly. What was her name?
But no,
the Holly,
I disagree. I don't think it was heavy at all.
Really?
When did you ever think they were serious about what action were they going to take? What was the point? There was no point to it.
Holly Hunter was running the Benghazi Investigation Committee. It was all these superficial statements being made by having these committees, by just showing that there was an investigation being done. You're trying to symbolically show that you believe there's wrongdoing, even though you can't prove it. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, it's just a bunch of political shenanigans. In this case, though, I think that Holly Hunter was correct, or at least I believe that she had a legitimate rationale for the action she was taking. I think that she was trying to work toward a good, and I think her countering Lex Luthor showed that she wasn't just out to get Superman for points. But you're right, at the same time, she was essentially impotent, and she only had the power over Superman that Superman allowed her to have over him.
I just don't understand what the point of it was. Why was she asking these questions?
I totally understand why she's asking the questions. It's
Because
she's not a guy with these extraordinary powers running around doing whatever the way he wants
to. So what does she want to talk to him for?
She wants to see if she can work some kind of accountability with him. She wants to see if she can create parameters around what he will do.
I don't think they don't ever say any of that shit. She doesn't ever say, no, this is what we're going to do. He needs to make sure that whenever we call him, he goes here.
That she doesn't think that Superman should be running around the world acting unilaterally. She wants to have a conversation. She does say that repeatedly. She wants to open up a dialogue with Superman to understand what he's doing and to recognize why the United States typically have limits on the action that they're willing to take. So, and to try to communicate that to him so he doesn't just run around and beat up terrorists left and right without recognizing that there are bigger consequences of that. Sort of like how Donald Trump tried to go after Hillary Clinton for how things worked out in Libya, how that region got destabilized because of actions we took and didn't take. But the fact was, the Arab Spring was going to happen without us. Our issues really will go back to the Iraq War. That's where we started having problems, was when we went to a region and destabilized the region completely needlessly. I think that what Holly Hunter is trying to say is that Superman's going in there and doing these simple-minded, good guy heroics without understanding the consequences of his actions and the blowback that has around the world. She's trying to stop.
You're filling in a lot of blanks.
Lois Lane explained that whole, her whole story arc then with the simple, you saved me, but bad things still happened in the bathtub before she got nailed in the tub.
Pa Kent did it again later on. Well, we dug a trench in the farm.
Yeah.
In the farm.
So that was kind of a...
Drowned some horses.
That's like Max saying...
I'm saying you're basically supporting the argument I just made.
Thing is, the Holly Hunter, that character, didn't need to be in the movie.
Right. I'm saying
you already had two other characters explain this to him.
But I don't think he did it as well. And I think that, again, a part of it is, like you said, it was an opportunity for them to try to show Lex Luthor as a Machiavellian schemer by setting her up to die in the explosion that shakes Superman's confidence, has him questioning whether or not he wants to continue continue to be Superman and helps manipulate Superman into the final battle. They're trying to show Lex's brilliance, and Holly Hunter's character ultimately it aids him by calling Superman to account over and over again and then getting bloated up.
And see, this is what I asked Mac too earlier when we did the podcast. What bothered me is Luthor has Mercy with him.
Oh, God, don't even get me started on Mercy Graves. I just want to get
Wait. He has her. She does everything for him. It's his sidekick. It's his bodyguard. And he leaves her into the congressional office knowing that she's going to be blown up. It made no sense
to me. No, it makes perfect sense, because here's the thing.
Please explain to me, because it makes sense.
First thing I want to say is Mercy Graves is a pre-existing character. She was introduced in the Superman cartoon series.
Yeah. She was an android. She would have laser arms and shit like that. I remember. I watched.
Was that in the...
Okay. When she would battle, one of her arms would change out and she would shoot at Superman or stuff.
There was also another version, I think in the comic book version, because they did adapt her to the comics like they had done a number of other original animation characters, where she was actually an Amazon. She was one of the Band of McDowell or something, one of these groups of Amazons that left Paradise Island long ago, but they continue to be active in the modern world. So she's like 6 foot something and well built and like totally kick ass, like you said, a bodyguard. How was that Mantis stick woman supposed to defend Lex Luthor against anything? What did she really do? She was basically his little personal assistant. She appeared doing a lot of stuff, but she couldn't throw down with anybody. I mean, if you blew on her, she was like Mr. Glass from Unbreakable. I think that if you blew in her general direction, she would fall over and bust bones. She was so thin. That poor girl looked so malnourished. There's no way that she's an actual bodyguard. What they did is they made sure that they got somebody who was highly visible. You're going to recognize this thin Asian woman hanging out with this total dork. So she's highly visible and she's like his assistant. And like you said, she's in the proceedings.
Dude, she busts Bruce Wayne in the kitchen. Like,
that's
she
all
had
she
parts.
Does is she says, you're not supposed to be here. She didn't do anything. She didn't threaten him with violence or anything. There's no way that she was going to physically take him out of there. She was a highly visible Lex Luthor employee, obviously a trusted aide to him because of that high visibility. He killed her because Lois was on his trail. At some point, Lois could have made some sort of tenuous connection and tried to get his name in the media. So he's able to counter if that ever comes up with, well, my assistant was there and she got blown up. I loved her. She was with me all the time. Why would I blow up my own assistant? She was part of his alibi.
You're putting way too much into that. I don't believe that was any thought. I think they killed her and they're like, it was just a character. They have so many characters coming in and out of this movie that make no sense. Like Pa Kent popping up in a hallucinogen or something. Like, characters are just coming, they make no sense. You introduce her, you kind of give her a story arc where maybe she's with Lex, she's his henchman, and then you just kill her. She looks at the seat with betrayal in her eyes. And I'm like, what is the point of this? What is the point of that?
You're saying she figured it out too.
Oh yeah, she looks at it, she's like, why ain't he here? And of course, this is where the piss jar's being turned
around. I thought that was Holly Hunter. No, Holly Hunter was the one.
She's turning the piss jar around and she's like, Granny's peach tea. And Mercy's sitting and she looks over at Luther's chair and she's like, eh.
So are you saying that Mercy was aware or that she was unaware?
I don't think she was aware.
I don't think she was aware either. She was a sacrifice.
I think.
Because the way you're saying it, when you say she looks betrayed, Holly Hunter wasn't working against Lex. Holly Hunter was working against Lex. She was actually about to expose a lot of the stuff that he was doing and then she got blown up. She wasn't working with Lex. She wasn't a sacrifice. She was somebody he needed to whack because she was onto him finally. It was Mercy that gets whacked without being aware. She's a sacrificial lamb, and I just told you why he did that.
That's why I don't believe that.
Because Lex still thinks that they can't pin it on him.
Yeah,
because he gave out bullets to everyone. That was being
I know. Yeah. I didn't say it wasn't dumb.
And the chair had the same metal as the bullets.
I know.
And it had lead in it. Like,
I didn't say it wasn't dumb. Yeah. I didn't say it wasn't dumb. I just said that's why she's dead. She's dead.
That's why she's dead.
Allegedly, he would have some alibi, even though the movie never gets that deep. It doesn't get deep to where he ever needs a stupid alibi.
But this gets to the point of the short-sightedness. You've got Jimmy Olsen. This is a guy who's been a major part of the Superman mythos since the 1940s. He debuted in the radio show. He was basically the guy that they created so that Superman had somebody to talk to.
Or the everyday
person. All the audio medium. Yeah.
He's the everyday person.
Then you've got Mercy Graves, a character that obviously was created for a reason for the cartoons. You've got a character who could potentially tie the DC universe together by being a Banda McDowell and being basically like the Dora Milaje were in Civil War, where you're like, whoa, here comes this bad bitch, right? And instead, they turn her into this attractive stick woman who they then kill off. So instead of using that to develop the connections between Lex and Wonder Woman in the future as part of this greater DC universe, they just sacrifice her for shock value. So in that case, it's extremely stupid on the part of the creators of these movies, because you're taking away the things that tie these movies together. And you're leaving us with people like General Stanwyck, who's not from the comic, and who cares about this guy? Unless he turns out to be Martian Manhunter, which was the theory that they were floating in Man of Steel, which I would freaking hate, because why is the Manhunter sitting in the Pentagon twiddling his thumbs while nukes are getting set off? So why is this guy around? This character doesn't need to be around. Why are you not killing the General Stanwycks that you're creating? And why are you killing characters that have decades of history that fans connect to for no other reason than because they recognize them from something they created an emotional attachment to, so you could ride in on that? And instead you're killing them, and you're also, that character had no relationship to the character she was named after. Aside from being an aide to Lex Luthor, she's not a bodyguard. She's not a big tough girl. She's not a robot with cool machine arms. She was nothing but a highly visible aide. So why wasn't she named another name and then blown up, and it wouldn't have mattered, except that you're trying to have an artificial superficial emotional response to the death without ever representing the character correctly enough that anybody could connect to the cinematic version in the first place. It was stupid. It was a bad move.
Okay. I just want to add this ultimate version in the beginning when Bruce Wayne, after the 9/11 building collapse, and he's running through all the smoke, and it reminded me of like a Naked Gun movie, because it's like first there's like a little kid, and then there's like a whole school of kids, and the kids are all holding hands, and it's just like, it's just every time he turned around, there's like more, like how they do it in the Naked Gun movies, where it's just like way over the top.
So thick that you almost reflexively start to laugh at it.
And then it's like, where's your mommy? And she's pointing up, oh, there, with the building.
Buildings have gone.
Yeah. It's like, oh, come on. But anyway, they cut the line of kids all holding hands. Yeah. Like, where the hell did this line of kids
well, that,
from?
And Bruce Randley runs up and puts one back with her group.
Yeah.
Oh, like,
yeah.
But there's an adult following right behind, so it's like, well, she probably could have done that, Bruce. God, show off. But speaking of characters, Jenny, right? They get Jenny Olsen. They cast her in that first Man of Steel movie. We all know that she's supposed to be the replacement for Jimmy Olsen, but they just stopped calling her Olsen. She's just Jenny. And so she's in this movie. She keeps popping up. We've never been given a reason to care about this character, but she just keeps popping up in random scenes, and she's wasted. She doesn't do anything.
Oh, she's Jenny Olsen? So I know.
That's the same actress from Man of Steel.
From Man of Steel, okay.
They do the same thing. And just like the person who works under the General Stanwyck guy that thought Superman was cute at the end of the first movie.
Yeah.
She's just there. You recognize her, but it doesn't mean anything. Those characters aren't being developed, so why are you even bothering to continue to cast these same actors in the movies if they're not going to be the next Phil Coulson, because you're not developing them enough so that we even know who the heck they're supposed to be?
Because
she's just Jenny.
Because Zack Snyder hates Superman, and you can tell because every single line in this film is shitting on Superman. He's killing off all of his supporting characters, he's developing none of them, and he turned this into a Batman.
Who had the bright idea of having Lieutenant Dan monkey his way around on top of the freaking Superman statue with no regard for physics whatsoever or the ability of a human being to lift their own weight and flop around like that and carry a bag and everything else? Why did they even do it that way? Why was that the call? Like, let's have the legless guy paint the statue and do it so poorly. So bad.
Vietnam disabled veteran imagery.
Maybe.
Vietnam protests, spray painting, monuments. Because you know they had the Vietnam monument around although it's the day they met Superman monument with the names of all those who've died all around it. I don't know if you noticed that. Just like the Vietnam.
Yeah, no, I caught that.
And you had the paraplegic. Really
poor taste.
Yeah. I'm telling you, this movie is fucking disgusting. When you realize what's actually going on in this movie, it's disgusting.
Why did this movie spin its wheels so much? As it makes perfect sense to me in a 3-hour cut. You got an ultimate cut, you're throwing all this stuff that you cut out of the movie originally, and yet there's stuff that's a key to the momentum of the movie that's cut out, and they leave all this flabby stuff where it's just ponderous, where they're just sort of standing around like doing nothing, having flashbacks to the Wayne murders again, having flashbacks to like Pa Kent, you know, it's just, couldn't they edit this stuff, just take that stuff out.
But they seem like the heroes in the films have mental problems, because Bruce has that horrible dream,
hallucinations.
Well, Bruce wakes up from a dream where he's attacked by Man-Bat, where he's looking at his mom's grave,
bleeding grave.
And he's attacked by a man bat. He wakes up to pop pills, drink red wine, and slap the hooker's ass to get out of bed.
Yeah, there's a woman in his bed. So
it's a hooker, dude.
Like,
okay. He has no time to date. It's a hooker. He has no time to date.
It could have been Tinder.
Call girl, dude.
It could have been Tinder. No, they could have both swiped Tinder.
But yeah, that's one of those things where it's like, I mean, it's bad enough that they got Batman running around with guns all the time, but he's running around with guns for most of the Batman movies. So
and you got to figure he's somewhat intoxicated or mentally stimulated, because he's popping those pills like crazy.
I mean, it would make sense for somebody who like never sleeps for him to maintain
all that pain,
probably
too,
taking all
and all the pain from all the beatings and stuff.
Yeah,
and like I said, the Pa Kent thing where Superman's walking up on the mountain and then his dad appears. I really thought that Superman was losing it. Like that was like the beginning of some kind of Kryptonium mental breakdown.
So is in Man of Steel, does he bury Pa Kent up on a mountain?
No, Pa Kent gets swept up by a hurricane, and we never see him again.
Tornado.
This is very important. Okay, as you've seen from the trailers, and we kept waiting for them to have more context because you thought they were going to negate this, but it was true. Clark Kent has to save a busload of kids from drowning. The bus goes into like a lake or something, and they're all going to drown. And Clark shows his abilities saving these kids, and he's never able to explain how he's able to do that. And eventually, it dies all over. And so Clark is talking to his dad about it, and his dad's really concerned about his cover being blown. And Clark's like, "Well, should I have let a busload of kids drown?" And Pa's like, "Maybe."
Yeah.
And then you watch the movie, and it's like, no, that's exactly how the scene plays out. That's exactly the intent of the scene. And then later on, there's a hurricane, and the family dog runs
out. There are no hurricanes.
So there's a tornado. The family dog runs out into the tornado. So Pa Kent Kent goes out to save the family dog and then, of course, dies himself.
Oh, no, no. It's a great scene, too. Wait, you got to describe the scene, though.
No, no, no. I'm not willing to go that deep into it.
Oh, it's horrible.
I remember we got that far in it.
So he goes into it, and then Clark is going to go and save his dad and the dog, and his dad's like, no, just stay, like, waves him off. He knows he's going to die, but he waves him off to make sure his kid continues to have a cover, right? That he doesn't expose himself. And then throughout this movie, they're constantly trying to remind you how Pa Kent wanted Superman to go out in the world and be a good guy. In direct opposition to everything they showed you in Man of Steel. Did they think that we didn't, as many callbacks as this movie had to the previous movie, did they think we forgot that they, how well they'd already established that Pa Kent cared about nothing but his family and nobody else on Earth, and didn't have any remorse, apparently, for the sacrifices that he was willing to allow to be made just to cover for his own kin?
I forgot.
So that just bothered me a lot. And then they have to have hallucination Pa Kent come in there and basically remind you, no, really, I thought I was being a hero, but instead I drowned all the horses in the Lang farm. Maybe you shouldn't be doing this after all. It's just terrible.
But that's that whole,
the message is terrible.
The whole thing is whatever he does good, there's going to be some kind of consequence opposite of that.
A negative consequence.
Yeah.
But did you ever buy at any point in this movie he was going to give up being Superman?
No.
Like, I don't, and you mentioned that earlier in your Holly Hunter rant, but I never once thought where he was literally pondering, I should stop doing this forever. Maybe I should settle down with Lois.
He does make those overtures, like, well, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. He does make those overtures, but I don't ever take him seriously.
But that's more self-doubt and less, I'm going to quit. That's more like, well, maybe next time, maybe I shouldn't save that kid.
It's more like, what should I do next time?
Yeah. He's doubting himself, and it's not like, I'm going to put down the cape and never do it again. Yeah. So I was like, ugh.
So one of the sequences that desperately needed to be cut out of this movie was the dream sequence where parademons are flying all around the world, where Batman's running around in a trench coat.
The Omega symbol.
Which is so stupid looking. In a trench coat.
You did notice that, though, right?
Yeah, there's a giant Omega symbol burned to the ground that Batman's trying to acquire kryptonite because he's trying to go after Superman. He has a team of insurgents, I guess, working with him. But then it turns out that they've been lured into a trap. All the insurgents are murdered. And then he starts running around beating everybody up. Instead, he wasn't going to beat everybody up because he was afraid his men were going to get killed. And then they start killing his men. And instead of shooting him first, they're shooting him last. And so he manages to fight all these guys in the least convincing action sequence ever. He doesn't even seem like he's interacting with the environment correctly. He's too slow. He seems groggy and flabby.
Well, I remember telling Matt, terrible. There's a point where you see a guy with a gun stop. And he doesn't pull the gun and Batman hits him. He stopped. He has the gun drawn, aimed, but he stops. Waits a second and he gets hit. I remember telling Matt, why didn't you just pull the trigger? That would have been it. It's bad AI in
a video game. Yeah, it's like Command & Conquer from 1996 or something. I don't know what that was. I mean, awful.
Not that bad, but.
And then of course, they have Superman show up and make his little pissy face and burn apparently there were remaining members of Batman's group and burns them in half after they've been dangling from chains. And then Batman shudders, and I swear to God, it looked like 50 Shades of Grey was about to happen on there. And I gotta say too, Henry Cavill's pissy face, that's not Superman. That really, he's got a great build, he's got a decent face, but every time he does that pissy face, he's not Superman.
Now, let me ask you this part, because me and Mac, well, I want to know his take on this. Now, when Bruce Wayne wakes up and sees, we're assuming the Flash?
Yeah, that was the Flash.
That was so bad looking.
Wait, but I want to ask you, okay, so was that a dream in a dream, because then he wakes up again?
Right.
Or was that a dream and he woke up, because in the back there's a piece of paper that's actually flying up in the air really high.
No, it actually happened.
He wakes up twice. No, he does wake up twice. So it is a dream within the dream, but it's not well executed at all. It's very much like a horror movie.
So
you think you're out of the dream and then, no, here comes Freddy Krueger. It's like, it was really badly executed. But Flash looked terrible. It
looked awful.
That armor looked like
We weren't sure. You didn't think it was Flash. I thought it was Orion. Yeah, he thought it was Orion the first time.
It was bulky.
I was like, that'd be kind of cool if it was Orion, but I'm pretty sure it was the Flash. Yeah. But usually with Flash, when he runs through time, he stops in the new time that he's at. He's not struggling to talk to you. He usually will literally time travel. He'll pop up in whatever time he's trying to get into. If we've watched the show, which I have, he pops up, he stays there for a little bit, then he runs really fast again, creates a portal, runs through time, gets chased by time demons, and then he's back there.
They actually just did a very similar thing in the DC Rebirth special.
No shock. That's a go-to move.
But it's Wally West on this one. So he's speaking in obtuse fashion about events that haven't happened yet. So Batman doesn't even know who the Flash is. Here's my problem is that was the longest amount of time I've seen Ezra Miller as the Flash, and I got to hear him now. I don't like the sound of his voice. I don't think he's going to sound good as the Flash. I don't like the way that he speaks and the way that they showed his armor. Why is a speeding guy got armor on? He looks slow. He looks bulky and slow. And I those people that are upset about Justin, whatever the guy's name, Grant Gustin.
I just call him Draftneck.
Okay, yeah. That guy, I've only seen him a little bit, but I can see now why they're having problems, because Ezra Miller, what little I saw of him in the movie, he's not my Flash. So just have to put that out there.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I've watched the show, and I mean, the show is good. I enjoy the show. It's great storytelling. The Flash looks like Flash. He acts like I assume Flash would act in real life. Yeah. Just a small bit. I was like, I didn't get it either. Like,
yeah, and
the armor to me harpered back to like, why does Cable have all those pockets?
Right.
It's like, it made no sense. Why would you put armor on a speedster? Yeah. It would just slow him down.
Yeah.
And so I was, yeah, bad.
I guess instead of a treadmill, he's got time travel armor. I don't know.
That's going on.
But while we're talking about the other DC heroes too, so you've got the sequence with Ezra Miller as the Flash where he stops a convenience store robbery.
Oh, wait. Where Luthor already created their symbols for them?
Yeah, yeah. He looks so douchey.
Oh, the long hair?
Yeah, he looks crazy and douchey.
He looks kind of Generation X.
Yeah, for the guy that everybody's liking because he's like the approachable boy next door
superhero. But he's supposed to be like a scientist kind of nerdy guy, right? With cropped hair.
I don't know which version Ezra Miller's playing. I didn't have a problem with him.
Actually, I thought when I saw it, I thought he was doing Impulse. Because Impulse is kind of that goofy, long haired, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
I could be wrong.
He didn't look like a scientist / forensic police officer who's off duty at the meeting store. He looked like a dude bro.
Yeah. What'd you think, Aquaman?
Why did it take Aquaman so long to stick his fork in a camera underwater?
He was holding his breath.
He's just like, just floating there.
Holding his breath.
Yeah. And then they do the whole Sonic thing, you know, underwater. That was not a good thing. That was not.
Oh, no, not my favorite one. What did you think of Cyborg?
Okay, here's the problem I have is, and this is something.
Is it one or several? Because it looks like you're going with several problems.
Well, here's the thing. I love that they got the actor from Terminator 2 who played Dyson to be Silas Stone.
And the funny thing is, I remember him from Eureka. I was like, it's Henry from Eureka. Yeah, great character actor.
Yeah, so I like that. Joe Morton is his name. And I like that guy. And I think it's great casting to have him as Silas Stone, especially because he's got such a great geek history.
Yeah.
Between Terminator 2 and Brother from Another Planet, you've got a great continuity there.
And let's not forget Eureka.
Okay, I did. I never saw that show. I'm glad that he's in there, and I know that they've got a fairly accomplished actor who's supposed to be playing Cyborg.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the key elements of the story is that Silas was never a good father. His son was more of a jock, in part to be rebelling against his dad because his dad was very distant, and his mom dies, and they never can connect after that. It's actually not dissimilar from the dynamic between Hank Pym and Hope Van Dyne mm-hmm. in the Ant-Man movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Victor Stone gets messed up by this alien creature. It's basically the blob from the old Steve McQueen movie where it's like a flesh-eating creature. It's just it's more like orangey instead of pink. And so his dad saves him. His dad is the one who gives him the cybernetic parts, but not only does he have that bad relationship with his dad, but also he blames his dad for keeping him alive and making him into this automated monster.
Isn't he dependent also on his dad to like constantly keep him maintenance?
Somewhat, but Star Industries can do a lot of that stuff. Once Silas actually had the suit made, then it made a difference. So one of the big differences they made in the New 52 was they decided that actually what gave him his cybernetic abilities, he was merged with a mother box from the planet Apocalypse. And the mother box is what allows him to function just regular
science. I've read some of the stuff where he starts like pinging when they're opening a boob tube, right?
And that's the thing too is they gave Cyborg the power to create boom tube, so it made him a very valuable member of the Justice League because he's the guy who's their transport now. He's their
ride. His gateway.
Yeah, he's their ride. They make it clear in just a short amount of time that Silas has failed to save his son, that his son is going to die, and that's why he opens up this mother box that suddenly begins forming Cyborg completely and starts forming his body. So they've taken that empowerment away from Silas Stone. They've taken that brilliance away from him. He's the guy who tries to save his son and fails, and then Apocalypsian or New Genesian technology makes Cyborg. So the black scientist fails, and he has to get alien stuff to save his kid. Really changed the dynamic, and it's really disempowering of a black character that was independent, self-sufficient, and was an exceptional being within their universe. So yeah, that fucking sucked. That really pissed me off.
All those scenes looked like they were created by fans and put up on YouTube.
Yeah, it looks like those fan movies that those guys were self-funding for a while there to try to show off their directing skills.
They all looked absolutely terrible.
Yeah, they was all badly directed. It was the big thing was it was great cosplay. That's as far as those things ever went.
And the Wonder Woman picture?
What'd you think? It's a still photograph, so they're not a lot going on there. It's whatever. We'll see what happens in the movie.
I didn't notice the American Indian in the back.
Yeah, maybe she's got her own.
Is she gonna have like her own little Dirty Dozen type characters?
Well, let's call them the Howling Commandos if that's what they're gonna be.
Really?
Well, I mean, if you're gonna have maybe it's Easy Company, it probably is Easy Company.
But did she have something like that in the comics?
No.
No.
Okay. No. She had Steve Trevor. She was part of military intelligence. So she actually worked for our army. She infiltrated. She was initially a nurse, and then she infiltrates our army, and she's working with Steve as part of the army. She's basically like his receptionist for years and years, and then eventually she becomes an agent of military intelligence herself, and eventually gets the rank of major in that discipline.
Okay.
I
just thought when I saw that picture, I was like, oh, it's kind of cool. It's going to be like I'm thinking, you know, military group.
Rough Riders.
Or whatever. Predator. Yeah, we saw Predators. Yeah. I'm thinking, you know,
but the problem
she's,
is,
she's Duke.
Yeah, but the problem is,
or Dutch.
We saw Captain America the First Avenger already, so we've already seen him team up with the Howling Commandos, and now she teams up with Easy Company. Maybe that's Sure Shot from Easy Company, because there is a Native American guy on the team. So if it turns out to be Easy Company, that's going to seem really derivative, which is funny because the Easy Company was way before the Howling Commandos. Howling Commandos were totally a ripoff of Easy Company. Company, except Easy Company didn't have anything to do with superheroes. They were just war characters, and they were in World War II. So for you to send them to World War I and have them team up with Wonder Woman, oh, you guys are just totally following the same script. Just like Suicide Squad versus Guardians of the Galaxy. It's like you guys are just trying to copy the Marvel movies.
See, this is weird. What they do. This is weird. When he franks like that, it's so weird, dude, because I had like no idea of any of this shit. I literally just said,
you never
I
heard
noticed
a Sure Shot from the Front Town Boys or whatever you just said. Who was it again?
No, I said there was a Native American Indian character in the picture, and he fucking gives a lecture about
who was it? Who was it? Who do you think it is?
Easy Company. With, I mean, dude,
I think his name was Sure Shot, or he might have been Little Feather. I never read a lot of Easy Company, but I knew they had a Native American in Easy
the
Company.
Fact that you know this, well, though, that man, frightens Rock's, me sometimes.
Easy Company is Sergeant Rock's troop, so all the Sergeant Rock Company stories had.
So Sergeant Rock might actually show up in this.
I think that they're probably going to do a pull
or hint at him.
I think that Steve Trevor is going to be running the group. So you've got the Captain America, the Steve Rogers analog running the group again.
I just frightens
me. Hey, I just got to point out again on this stream how stupid it is that she's trying to get back a digital photograph.
Yeah.
Well, see, I remember you making that point too. We don't know that that's out there, and I think that she's actually trying to get the video of her at the ATM because that wouldn't be for public consumption.
No, I think she says she's got a photograph of mine.
Yeah, she's focused on a photograph that was emailed to her as she scrolls down through it because he's asking her, "Is this you? Like, where have you been?
You don't take back a digital photo.
Okay,
it's digital.
But I don't think it's the photo. I think the photo might be in the public domain, maybe, possibly. I think the key.
I think that links her to a different time period, though.
Right, but the ATM footage.
Okay, from 2015.
Okay, but stop. Okay. But she says he has a photo of mine.
Yeah. Right. Okay, so she's.
Yeah, and the ATM and stuff is from 2015, so not too long ago.
I would think that she has no clue that he has ATM footage.
Well, if it's a pure photograph, too, then you could just call doctor, you know, because unless you have the physical photograph, then you're not really able to prove anything. But here's my problem. Who assumes that a 100-year-old picture where two people look the same are the exact same person? It's like we make that joke about Nicolas Cage being a vampire because you found that guy from Civil War that looks like Nicolas Cage. That doesn't mean that that's actually Nicolas Cage and he's been alive for 150 years. So who in their right mind is going to go, oh, you look like that chick from 100 years ago. Maybe her granddaughter or great-granddaughter. No, it's her. You've been alive for 100 years and you're still vibrant. Who's going to jump to that freaking conclusion?
You just punched a huge hole in their logic.
It makes no sense. I honestly didn't even think about that, but
wow, that's even a bigger...
No, it's just dumb.
Yeah.
It's just stupid. It's just contrived garbage because they were like, we have to figure out a way to get a JLA movie. What are we going to do? He's got a photo. She's trying to get it back. Except it's digital and it can be emailed 1,000 times over. So you don't get it back. That doesn't exist. There is no get back a digital photo.
I know they're trying to sell Batman as the human hero, the guy who's just got human abilities. And they, like, during the fight sequences, they show him being more vulnerable. He actually gets hurt one time in one of the fights. But then they also try to have him do stuff like slamming people's heads to the ground and fighting multiple people at once. Very Captain America-y, but nowhere near as cool looking or hell, he's not even as cool looking as Black Widow during his peak fight. And they have the Batmobile doing stuff like driving through brick walls and shaking off rocket-propelled grenades and stuff. Are they trying to do the human Batman? Or are they just trying to make him a superhero? Do they know what they're trying to do with him?
Dude, he was murdering people. And I hate the fact when people are like, well, Batman used to kill people. Dude, he slammed a dude's head against the wall and left a huge blood smear on the wall.
He's shooting people with guns all the time, too.
So let's talk about that then real quick. Because that's the big defense of this is Batman killed people in his other movies, and B, they kill people in Marvel movies all the time. And you pointed this out. You used the word sadistic in the film.
Yeah.
There is this sadistic aura tone to the violence and how he kills in this movie. He's killing people with grimaces on his faces. When he stabs that guy with a knife, it's like he's almost giving it a twist.
Like, it's a vengeance. That's more vengeance. It's not like I'm stopping this guy. I want this guy to hurt because apparently he does something else because the guy makes a sound
then
he comes back and hits him again.
But when he's chasing the guys in the car, grappling hooks the car with the guy in it, presumably.
Bodies.
And continues to drag the car behind him and then throws it on top of another car of guys. And the dude jumps out with the minigun. So he pulls out his miniguns and just blows the dude to hell. It's over the top death. We know
Quentin Tarantino.
Oh, man. I bet.
No, not even Tarantino because it's not gleeful fun. It's full on sadistic.
Oh, no. He's trying to make it gleeful. He's trying to make it video gamey.
And it culminates.
It feels like 80s action movies. It feels like Death Wish 3 or something.
Or RoboCop, where it's like you can just keep shooting the body.
But it's too.
With Ed 209, keep shooting the body over.
RoboCop is clearly a satire. RoboCop is going over the top for comedic value. This is just dumb. You know, like again, Death Wish 3, where it's just completely over the top because you think it's that cool. Let me kill as many people as possible with a Gatling gun. It's so cool. You don't get the joke. You don't get that they're criticizing those type of movies through their excesses.
So it culminates in the fight with Superman, where he can't just kill Superman.
He has a torture.
He has to keep shooting him with the grenades to weaken him.
Slams him into those pillars.
Pummel him and pummel him and pummel him and punch and punch and punch. And then finally, when he gets the Spear of Destiny to kill Christ, he doesn't just stab him with it. He cuts his face first.
Did he grin? I swear I saw a grin.
He was grinning, dude, or something. Because, you know, as he talked about man and how great man man is. Yeah. You're not a god. And I'm just, I'm telling you, this. I know you're trying to say it wasn't as bad as you thought it was. This movie was fucking garbage, worse, dude. Man. This is just trash.
Watch it again in a couple of weeks.
Okay. No, I'm never going to watch this movie again. Just because it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be, just because it was much more tolerable than I thought it
would
be.
Watch the theatrical one.
Okay. No, I don't want to. But it is funny that you mentioned that. Batman is supposed to be a brilliant detective, right?
Oh yeah, we already talked about that, dude. Huh?
But well, that's what's so great about Lois Lane, though. Lois Lane is the one who's actually doing detective stuff and figuring out
she
what's going on.
She is very much more detective than
he is. And then Batman is just getting led by the nose by Lex Luthor like a complete moron. But here's my number one problem with how bad Batman is. This guy's supposed to be brilliant, right? He's got all this technology. He's got all these adaptations, you know, that he can use with the Kryptonite. A spear? How do you go to a spear?
Because of the symbolism. Spear of Destiny.
That's why
symbolism.
I looked over to Mac and said, Spear of Destiny. And he was like, what? I said, dude, the minute I saw him building a spear, when we saw it in the theaters, I was like, okay, they keep calling him Christ. Well, they're going to build a spear? Like, really? Is he gonna stab him on the side?
But instead of slashing his face, why didn't he get him in the side first? Yeah.
He was going for it. Yeah. He was going for it until the reveal, but he was going for it.
Yeah.
No, the slash was for, again, the sadisticness.
Yeah.
The smile of, I'm hurting you. Look,
well,
you hurt.
And so he can have the cut on his face the rest of the movie. Yeah. It's a little more visible.
What's the point of him falling where he threw Superman and he lands on that pile of rocks, tying his feet, doing a little speech as he drags him to a middle room and just starts wails him.
Drags him through the streets. I'm telling you, dude.
And starts wailing him against pillars. Pillar. Like, that made no sense.
And again, with the physics and the level of CGI quality of, like, Van Helsing, you know?
But
you never believe that's a human being.
Trust me, the people...
doesn't move like a human body, and why is he doing all that
stuff? The people I argue with about the Batman scenes, because they're like, well, you're not a Batman fan. I'm like, I've been reading Batman for a very long time. Batman never grabbed Joker and like ran him through windows to get off on it. He beat you up to stop
you.
To stop whatever was going on. Batman was getting off on it. Like,
it was clear that the filmmakers were getting off on beating up Superman too. It was so clear that Zack Snyder and the DCEU can't stand this character, and they're just totally getting off on beating the hell out of
him. It was when they're at Lex Luthor's party and he confronts Bruce Wayne about, well, how do you let that Batman run around your city? And he was all like, you're telling me that when we have an alien from space and every time he saves a cat in a tree, the Daily Planet writes a puffy
piece
about
it? I like that exchange personally.
And what does Clark do? He like hangs his head. Like, right. I'm like, dude, like, this is Clark
Kent. Come back at all.
Clark Kent and Superman they get destroyed everywhere in this film in all aspects, like mentally, because he just does stupid things. He's obviously the dumbest guy in the movie. Superman is the dumbest character in the movie.
Yeah.
So then he even tries to be like, oh, well, I'm a real reporter. And he goes and tries to confront Bruce Wayne and just gets dressed down in front of everybody. Yeah. And then he gets his ass kicked in the suit. It's at all points.
Well, so
I just saved Lois. I wasn't talking about Lois. I got your mom tied up in a freaking room. Oh, he starts flipping porn picture.
Yeah, and he's on his knees. And of course, I mean, we got to get to Luthor eventually, where he's doing all these really weird
things. I'm saving that for last.
And he goes and he puts wants to touch his hair, but he doesn't touch. He goes, and now the god bows to me. I was like, what the fuck? What? I didn't get that. There were so many scenes in this movie that took me out of the movie so fast.
Yeah. I think probably Goyer is one of the main problems too. I don't understand.
That's my rant. I did a whole rant on why do these companies still keep going to him and saying, write us a movie?
Yeah, because he made Blade a success 16 years ago. Okay.
Okay. It wasn't very hard, dude.
Still like,
stabby stabby vampires to techno music. Not real hard.
Well, and then he also revived the Batman franchise. He's the guy who wrote the kind of terrible Batman Begins that really doesn't hold up well at all.
Yeah.
And he co-wrote The Dark Knight, which I think that it was Nolan's people that made that movie what it was.
Yeah.
But he gets credit for it. Okay. And honestly, I think he's the guy who gets into a room with these executives that have contempt for superheroes, and he's on their wavelength, and they dig him. He's like, oh, you'll be able to make this good. You're not going to do a stupid superhero movie. You're one of us. You get it. You're good at adapting it without making it dumb like a comic book. I think that's where he's been getting the whole thing.
Because
of his tattoos and his attitude, he is.
I think he literally is destroying DC's movies, because I honestly want Suicide Squad to do well. I really do. DC needs a win. I'm not a huge DC fan, but they need a win, dude. Like, after this,
I want there to be DC movies. I just don't want more DC movies like this.
Well, I want the companies to make good movies so that they'll keep making them. But with crap like this, when we went to go see this movie, and we talked about this on our little whatever we did, we were sitting outside the theater. There's people sitting with us, and when the movie ended, people came out like you drowned their puppy. No one came out like, oh wow. Not one person. Everyone was somber and sad, except for the kid that ruined the ending for you.
It ends at a funeral, so.
But no one.
I think, no, but it was more like people were just like tired.
Yeah, I was just.
It was a chore. This movie's a chore.
It's a good point.
A lot of death. I mean, they call call it the Snyder Murderverse as a joke, but it is. It's a freaking murder. Every scene, somebody's just getting... It's just sad. The whole movie's just really terrible. I don't mean just terrible, because it is terrible, but like, there's nothing happy in this movie. There's nothing to be...
Joyful?
You get the brief moment.
Batman beats the heck out of all those people.
Oh, no.
You get the brief moment when Wonder Woman
dude, no, Wonder Woman, that was the only time in the theater where, and it was mostly women, were like, ah! And I was like, she blocked with a shield. Okay, like, calm the fuck down.
Lex Luthor takes a corpse, shaves the fingertips off the corpse, yeah, and is able to access all the functions of an alien ship that he's able to activate, and is still working at 37% capacity, and they can't give any number of it, even though it's under freaking water. And then the first thing the ship does, recognizing him as a Kryptonian, is tell him all about Kryptonian history and technology, like he isn't supposed to already know this. And then he takes a corpse that he'd shaved the fingers off of, which, when you think about it, maybe he should just brought the corpse with him. Or cut the hand off.
He puts it
in the water of this submerged ship, and then he cuts himself with a Bowie knife, and he's like this scrawny little nerd guy. He cuts his hand wide open with his Bowie knife. He drops it in the water, and somehow that magically turns the corpse of General Zod into a giant monster after a certain period of time.
Oh, no, you described the unspoken one. No, he bled onto his face.
Yeah.
Yes. And then he drifted off in the water and then became Doomsday.
Yes.
So what are you saying doesn't make sense there?
Yeah, I mean, really.
I just want to know.
I was like, what? In the theater, I was like, what is going on? Why is he bleeding on a corpse? What does this have to do with anything?
Did Michael Shannon get any money for them taking a rubber life cast and putting it in the movie?
I don't think he did.
Supposedly he played Doomsday. They had pictures of him with these like flippers.
What?
And he's walking around with flippers.
I remember
bothered to pay Michael Shannon.
If you look online, I remember seeing something, I think on CNN, where they showed him, I believe it was him, and he had these flippers on. And they're like, why do you have flippers? What are the flippers for? And he's like, oh, well, it's part of the CG and one of the entertainment.
I don't know. I thought that was a big deal because he wasn't in the movie at all, and he was watching it and was like, oh, there I am. I'm a freaking
really?
So,
I'm not sure if mine is my remembering
the,
this. Right?
The reason why I bring this up is when we watched the credits at the end of the movie and they were crediting people like Dan Jurgens for contributing to the movie, was Rob Liefeld's name on that list? Because isn't that the same thing that happened when Falcon got his superpowers from Captain America, cutting his hand open and bleeding green blood into his mouth?
He gave him a quote-unquote blood transfusion. Heroes Reborn. Right, and Heroes Reborn.
I don't know.
He cuts his hand open and bleeds into his mouth.
Cap does that to
Falcon. That's how Falcon gets his superpowers, because he has superpowers in the Heroes Reborn universe.
So a black man can only come up if a white man bleeds into him.
It was green. Okay.
It was really? Yeah, Cap's blood is bleeding?
In Heroes Reborn when Rob Liefeld dropped.
Okay, I don't think I read those.
I think they even used the word transfusion, which that's not how you have a blood transfusion. I don't remember the issue. I gotta look in, but I remember it's like, a blood you don't eat blood to get a blood transfusion?
So does this prove that Cap was actually a Skrull?
I don't know. We're going way off now. You did not miss anything in that scene. It literally made no sense that you just bled on a Kryptonian corpse and that's how you born Doomsday.
Also, Lex Luthor had two oldest tricks that he referred to. They were completely different. So which one is supposed to be the oldest of the two oldest tricks?
I don't know.
There's just no kind of...
Okay. Well, to me, and I remember we joked about this, that Doomsday was really just a troll. Like, they were really punching in that Lord of the Rings.
He was an orc from
Lord of the Rings.
But we're not the only ones that made that joke.
Really?
In the commercials.
We were first because we did it like our show's pretty fast.
No, I mean, in the commercials before the trailers, people were like, damn, that was like an orc from Lord of the Rings. That doesn't look like Doom.
Did Warner Brothers do the Lord of the Rings movies?
New Line is owned by Warner Brothers. Okay. Yeah.
Costume laying around.
When Lois was giving Superman the big speech about how his S symbol means hope, because that was in the trailer from Man of Steel, to remind him that he's Superman, why didn't she mention the part where the entire bomb conspiracy hinged on her personal connection to Superman and somebody obviously knowing about that personal connection? Because it make a big point of her realizing, oh my God, they knew that Superman would be in the desert because I was there and Superman was going to protect me. And then she never informs him there must be a conspiracy and they must know your secret identity. And he doesn't find that out until he goes after Lex Luthor at the end of the movie.
Well, for the same reason she didn't tell him about the bullet in the beginning.
Why are you not upset that she was pushed off a building and he just happened to be to the saver?
Well, no, it's because that's the thing. He's sort of creepy stalking her.
Is he?
Time.
Okay,
yeah,
so
Lex is like, I know he always shows up whenever she's in danger, so I'm just going to shove her off the edge of the building.
So then Superman is creepy stalking her?
Yeah, I think.
No, they're together.
He's in tune.
Her scream is his cell phone call.
Right.
You know, that's just how that works. It's like they couldn't give her a freaking signal watch like Jimmy Olsen used to have because too comic booky. It's stupid. Perry White, of all the people to keep this movie throughout the movie and make sure you see him all the time, why would you keep the guy that's really annoying, who you don't like, and is just a jerk to everybody?
Once did he scream Great Caesar's Ghost. I was really upset.
In our podcast, I didn't say I didn't mind him that much, but this second time around, he's really like, why did you have to pay Lawrence Fishburne to do this? Like, why is Lawrence Fishburne in this movie?
Jackie Cooper wasn't in those movies all that much either, but he was the, you know, hey, go out and do good work, and man, I like this Clark Kent guy. He's the fastest typist ever. knew, and you just liked him because of the character he was playing, even though he wasn't in the movie all that much, right? Or any of the movies. So why do they devote the entirety of Lawrence Fishburne's screen time to just being a jerk, and you don't like him, and you kind of wish he would die, and nobody bothers to shoot him in the face?
Well, I think he was there for comic relief, but none
of... supposed to be funny?
Yeah, none of the jokes were funny.
I think he was supposed to be funny.
That's Lois, funny?
Yeah, that was supposed to be a gag where he's like, Coach! And she was like, business.
Whatever. No, like, something economy.
Like, coach, coach. And has to repeat himself. And then later on, where she's in the helicopter, and he's like, I want you to go straight to the building. And then he goes, the building, Lois. That's supposed to be a running gag.
That's why they don't have humor in these movies, because they're so disconnected from the concept of anything humorous.
There is humor throughout the movies. Just like at the end, when Ma Kent is like, I knew you were a friend of my son's. You've got a cape. That's supposed to be a joke.
Just a reminder, sometimes motherfuckers got to ice skate uphill.
Yeah, every now and then. No, some motherfuckers always trying to ice skate uphill.
Yeah, Alfred too. You know, the thing about Alfred, he's supposed to be the acerbic wit bounced off of Batman and kind of undercuts his pretensions and stuff. And Jeremy Irons is just such a jerk, and he's just nasty. Well, I guess we're never going to have another generation of Wayans. He just does nothing but make these catty comments. Yeah, why is he in this movie? He's not fun.
I didn't care for him very much in this one either. Like, they are. He's supposed to play off of Bruce Wayne's brooding, right? And instead, he was just as, like, you can tell, oh, it's another day where we're going to go, you know, harm a bunch of criminals. He probably goes out back and just smokes 4 or 5 packs of cigarettes and then goes back downstairs to repair another bat gadget. I kind of liked him the first time around. I don't know if maybe there were a couple extra scenes with him in this one that just helped sour me on him, but I didn't think he was any good in this movie either.
When they push Lois off the building, I don't know if you remember, but there was a sequence, well, for starters, when Joker falls to his death, but I think there was also another sequence with Batman where it's clear that Tim Burton had to go in there and use cell animation to show the action appearing. It just all of a sudden the characters become a cartoon for a second there. And it's almost like a stylistic choice because it's sort of a callback to the comics and everything else. But also there was 1989. Why does the CGI in this movie from this year look like a Fleischer cartoon from 6 years ago, but not as good?
I mean, you can just blanket the whole movie with that. The CG in this movie is not good at any point. It's
so
never
bad.
Good.
It's so rubbery. It's
very, very rubbery. Very rubbery.
The whole movie reminded me of the worst parts of the two Hulk movies in terms of, like, everybody looks like they're rubber
and,
people.
And I tell you, you think it would be easier with all the dark tones, too.
Mm-hmm. It's such a dark movie, and no.
Because it's got to be way harder to make CG look semi-convincing in bright sunlight.
Especially a green guy besides, and they still look better 10 years ago than this movie does. Yeah. By the way, Superman's boom, that's not Iron Man's repulsor ray. That gets really annoying fast. Why does Superman have to go boom every single time he flies? Boom!
It's just boom. His thing, man. Irritating. They're showing you how fast he is.
I don't know if you've ever seen the uncut version of Richard Donner's first Superman movie, but there's a sequence where Superman's trying to go after Lex Luthor, and he ends up going through this gauntlet of fire and ice and machine guns, and it's actually pretty cool, especially for the times. It looks really nifty. Why do they feel the need to do that again in this movie, and why do they make it less believable by just Superman randomly steps on a switch and these guns shoot up? It just so happens that he hits just the right spot to trigger these guns to shoot at him instead of it being like a remote control or something. Who thought that was a good idea? And the gaps between the different kinds of blasts that he gets hit by, and the fact that, like, Batman's laid these traps over this huge area and Superman just happens to be in just the right spot for this stuff to work. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it all ends up with the stupid spear being in this one particular location. Did nobody think this through?
No.
It's just so terrible.
No, it was just an excuse to have a CG fight. But yeah, it's like, well, why did he even set up machine guns and sonic guns when he was just going to go to the kryptonite? It doesn't make any sense.
They repeatedly make it clear that Superman could kill Batman at any time he wants to, and he constantly holds back and doesn't kill Batman, and he very nearly gets killed for doing that. Is the whole point of this movie to say, just kill people and don't even think about it and don't sweat it, just kill people? What was the message being told there, that Superman's just holding back the whole time and Batman, and giving Batman all these opportunities? He just looks like a punk. He looks like a schmuck for allowing Batman to keep beating on him when he could have killed Batman at any freaking time. Literally one freaking heat vision blast would have taken Batman out, and he doesn't do it.
Is that the message of this movie? He's supposed to be showing restraint because he doesn't want Ma Kent to die, but he needs Batman's help to save her.
Which is another stupid thing.
I know, dude.
He's Superman. He's got x-ray vision. He's got heightened hearing. He can fly. He can move at superhuman speed. Why does he need to involve Batman in that at all?
I don't know.
Why doesn't he just go find Ma Kent himself?
I don't know.
It doesn't make any damn sense.
I know. I don't know how he knows that Lois is about to get killed in Africa, but doesn't know that Ma Kent's been kidnapped out of her home and never returned home. It doesn't make any sense.
When they're about to kill Superman with a spear, and that little kid is going, oh, can we just stop doing that in movies? Can we stop having the child doing the little moan thing? Because in all movies, it's so played out. Who thought that was going to work again? This whole movie, it bothered me so much because I think Hans Zimmer's score, which very much paralleled his score for Man of Steel, was actually really good. But when applied to the movie this bad and this obvious, this artless of a movie, it makes you very aware of the artifice. It makes you very aware alert. Somebody's trying to manipulate your emotions and failing miserably.
I just want to say that Clark Kent is the worst reporter ever. And I don't understand this whole crusade he's on to get Batman in the paper when in this movie they show him online reading all of these articles that are negative about Batman. Why are you trying to get it in the newspaper if it's already online? Like, people are already talking about it online, how Batman's bad. So what are you investigating? I also don't understand, and people have pointed this out a million times, they mentioned that Batman's been around for 20 years, but it doesn't seem like Clark Kent has any freaking clue who Batman is. It doesn't seem like he has any clue who Bruce Wayne is.
Have you heard of this band named Nirvana? I really want to devote a series of articles to this band.
He calls them, when are we going to talk about the Bat Vigilante in Gotham? The one that's been in business for 20 years? When are we going to talk about the 20-year-old superhero Clark?
How's this guy continuing to get work in newspaper industry that's shrinking only the best people can continue to work? Yeah. Martha. Save Martha. Who calls their mom Martha? You know, who says their mom's name? Save this person's name. Nobody even talks like that. How are we supposed to believe that somebody's going to be save Martha?
Right. He should have just said, my mom's being held captive. This is all Lex Luthor.
Yeah. They have the same name, but I was just so badly
done. Should have never got to that point. When he landed, he should have said, Bruce, Lex Luthor has my mother. He's pitting us against each other. Instead, he was like, we need to, and then he'd get shot something. And then he just gave up and just started trying to kick his ass.
Yeah.
Why didn't they shoot Martha in the face immediately after Lex Luthor told them to, since they knew that Superman wasn't doing what he was supposed to do, and that's why they put a gun in her face at 10 minutes till the end of the countdown clock where they're supposed to shoot her in the face? And even if they didn't do it then, why didn't they shoot her in the face once they knew that there was somebody in the building making a bunch of noise and gunfire was going off and everything else?
You're hostage.
Yeah, that's the only thing I can think of. I thought about it this time when I was watching it. Is that they, at that point, he was keeping her around for defense against they had to assume, right, that was Superman they're busting in. Mm. That now I've got her, I'll kill her, dude, you gotta leave me alone. Whereas if he just killed her, then he'd caught, because you can't outrun Superman.
When Batman bursts through a wall, and again, Batman bursts through a wall, and grabs the guy who has an anti-aircraft gun in his hands. It's like an M60 or something, wasn't it?
It was big.
And he turns the gun around on the guy who has a flamethrower that he's going to use to kill Martha Kent. Which, again, why is he using a flamethrower? I get it, why that's they did his, it in Africa.
I think that's his thing.
Letting all that slide, why does Batman shoot the gas tank, then come out of the wall and use his cape to save Martha from an explosion that he created, instead of just shooting the guy with a gun? And also, what happened to the guy with the gun? I guess he got flamed. But why not just shoot? Why?
Because special effects.
And also, how is it that Batman is able to make an intercom call back to Lex Luthor when Lex Luthor's calling his terrorist? He's like hanging out for 10 minutes and then Lex Luthor calls just so Batman can be like, this isn't going to work out.
Well, because obviously all the radios survived the exploded flamethrower too, right?
Why doesn't Doomsday have a penis? And why do they like really get a good butt indentation? And they give you really good clear shots of his whole pelvic region in the midst of this fight? Why did they have a naked
Doomsday?
Because
if you put pants on him, he would literally be the Incredible Hulk. Literally.
Why didn't he have like rocks protruding from there to cover his genitalia or just anything, literally? Like something.
It's very off-putting.
Yeah. Why is Doomsday gigantic? And why does he shoot energy beams?
Because he's
and why can't
hybrid.
They adapt any of these characters correctly so they're remotely recognizable? And wouldn't it have been way cooler if Doomsday just had the knuckle spears? Wouldn't that have looked just like way cooler?
No, they should have just done Doomsday's origin. Yeah. It's fantastic. Yeah, that's the real why.
Now you can't have Doomsday in another movie, right. So you can never tell his really cool origin story.
Right. So you have Doomsday's really cool origin, and instead we got Lex Luthor cuts his hand and bleeds on Zod's face and dumps him in some water.
Yeah. Lex Luthor's menstruation baby. So Wonder Woman has been in this movie throughout. She's been showing up in a dress and just sort of like interacting with these characters. How does Bruce Wayne, I guess it makes sense because Bruce was able to get the ATM footage and therefore link it to a bank account and therefore know who Diana Prince is and find out her location and email her stuff.
If you say so.
Which is already quite the no prize I'm earning right here. But when she hears all this stuff is happening, and all this stuff's been happening for a while. It's only as she's getting on a plane to leave and then she hears that Superman and Batman are in the area and all this stuff's happening. She gets off the plane then. She waits until then to get off the plane. And then the stewardess knows her name is Miss Prince.
I'm assuming she's some sort of famous art collector, art dealer, antiquer. Yeah, now.
So I know that they knew that she was going to be in the movie. So why does it feel like every scene that she's in feels like an insertion done late in the production?
Because I believe that they was all insertions late film. If anything feels rushed in this movie and last second, it was probably rushed in the last second. And that's a pretty safe assumption.
Why at a major East Coast metropolis do we see the military fire a nuke at an alien being and manage to hit that alien being in midair despite it not having heat signatures or anything like that would make sense? And why is that exactly like the ending of the Avengers and they had to have known that nuking the city to get rid of the alien menace was exactly like the Avengers? What was going through their heads when they did that?
I think the firing the nuke is just kind of a trope.
I assume that it's Snyder had to take that sequence from Dark Knight. Of all the things to take from Dark Knight, he had to have this nuke.
Yeah, you had to have the
nuke. So he could have Superman be all desiccated, and then he gets in the sunlight and he becomes pretty again, but then they just kill him anyway. So why do they go to the trouble of making him pretty again? And who was going to buy that anyway?
I think they're playing up the fact that he can come back from death.
I think it's both.
I think they're foreshadowing that Superman can come back from death, and they're also, they were trying to hype up that Doomsday keeps getting, the more you kill him, the more powerful he gets. And the fact that the people of Earth were willing to sacrifice Superman, so now the president's got to be like, oh, sorry about that, Supes. Didn't mean to kill you there. But they did say, oh, they're safely, you know, above the atmosphere. Everything's cool. We can detonate a nuke up in the atmosphere. They're far enough up. So they made sure to tell you that. They were very clear in this film to say over and over again, the dock's inhabited, or downtown Metropolis. Look, luckily it's mostly vacant right now. And
because of all the criticism they got for the first,
they're high enough up in the atmosphere. We don't have to do it. Yeah, I mean, they were very clear. Yeah. Annoyingly clear.
Lois grabs a spear that she knows could kill her boyfriend. She throws it into a random body of water instead of securing it. Then she has to go back to get it when she realizes, for reasons that don't make any sense to me anyway, that they're going to need the spear to kill Doomsday, because why would she know anything about Doomsday or how he operates?
Yeah, I don't understand how she's put the connection together that he's Kryptonian. That doesn't make any
sense. And then, of course, she goes into the water to fish out the spear just as a wall falls to trap her underwater. And then she manages to survive underwater for like 5 minutes. And then she taps on a wall, and in the midst of this gigantic battle that's blowing everything up, Superman hears the tapping, goes and saves her, and grabs a spear, and then decides he has to be the one to wield a spear against Doomsday, even though it's his weakness.
Mm-hmm.
The fuck?
Yeah.
Just who wrote that, and why? What?
I don't know what to tell you, man. It's dumb. This is not a good film. And what pisses me off, and this is what pisses me off more than anything, you had 3 hours to explain this. It's like, how did you rush an ending of a 3-hour movie? Like, I don't understand. How was there no buildup?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. So Wonder Woman shows up, and it's really contrived, and it's like something that was good, played well in the trailer, but in a movie, it's like, really? You're just gonna have her show up, and there's like, I thought she was with you. Who has the time for that kind of jocularity? But you know, they did that because they wanted to be like the Avengers. So in the span of this 3 hours, why couldn't we ever have any kind of shawarma moments? Why couldn't we ever have these characters connect in any remotely human fashion? Why couldn't Batman and Superman fight each other at some middle point in the movie, just like they did in the Avengers, and then move past that instead of making the entire movie about stalling to have them fight for reasons that nobody ever buys in a brutal fashion, and then they're supposed to be like best buddies at the end
because Martha,
and they haven't built up Wonder Woman at all either, so she just runs around and does those Xena bits, and she's just like chopping at Doomsday. And it's funny too, because like if she'd been using her lasso or using her bracelets and stuff, then it would have made sense that you wouldn't necessarily think that Wonder Woman could take the spear and kill Doomsday. But since she's actually shown chopping arms and legs off of Doomsday, because she has to be an ultraviolet character too, why does nobody decide, hey, you've got especially once the lasso gets loose, she like finally does lasso Doomsday, and that's actually fairly effective. Why didn't anybody just go, here, take the spear and kill Doomsday?
Look, man, it's been said a billion times. Why didn't he hit it to Batman even? Yeah. If he was subdued with the lasso, give it to anybody.
He had time to run off, find the last kryptonite gas pellet that he had.
You missed the dumb thing where Batman's like, I gotta get to the spear. I need to draw him with me.
Oh, yeah.
He's gotta follow me for the spear.
Where Doomsday's on an uninhabited island, so Batman feels he needs to draw Doomsday to him so that he can stab him with the spear that he's got.
Instead of just going to get the spear
and coming back. Yeah, it's to get the spear first. Instead, he draws Doomsday after him, and he fails. He almost dies. He never gets the spear. Batman is just stupid. But Wonder Woman, she's got a lasso. One of the things that the lasso can do in the comics is it can control your mind, basically. It's like you have to submit to her will when you've got the lasso on. So that could have been a really great way to resolve this if they're going to actually finally use the lasso, and they just don't. And that would have been a really cool thing. It would be a much more cool, interesting thing for her to be able to do, even temporarily, even to give the creature pause. But they don't, because all they want to do is stab and shoot things. So they have Steppenwolf show up. And, you know, they show this in the trailers for the Ultimate Edition featuring Steppenwolf. Everything that you see of Steppenwolf, almost literally, is in the trailer already. He's juggling Tesseract, which I assume are supposed to be like mother boxes. But by having three of them that look exactly like Tesseracts, it just makes you think of Infinity Stone. So it connects them that much more to Marvel.
You realize you're going to have Darkseid, who looks like Thanos, wielding Tesseracts. And people are going to be like, I thought those were cosmic cubes. Yeah. Like, what the hell are you doing? Like, why does Thanos have cosmic cubes and he's fighting Superman?
And see, the mother box are distinct looking thing, and they don't look like Tesseracts. And so even if they wanted to change it up, why would you have them be just these gray cubes?
Yeah,
there's no imagination at all. They don't look like anything special.
Yeah. Well, it is possible, because that's a deleted scene. They just didn't flesh out the CG on it.
The Kent funeral, they're Amish, and they make a trail through corn or like a field of, I guess it is corn, right?
That's a cornfield.
Corn stalks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What?
Yeah. With Amazing Grace playing on a bagpipe.
What does Scottish bagpipes have to do with a funeral in Kansas?
Because it's a movie funeral. You're supposed to have Amazing Grace played on bagpipes.
And also, when they fire a giant military cannon. Is that supposed to be the equivalent of his 21-gun salute? And they're trying to say that Superman is so much specialer than soldiers. They've got to fire like a military-grade cannon to salute him.
Well, yeah, people were weeping in the crowd.
And again, did they think that that was going to work? Did they think that the audience was going to respond to that? After
I don't know. Look, man, when he defeated Zod the first time, they built him a statue. So I guess...
who takes a wedding ring and puts it in the mail and mails it to their mom so that they could surprise their girlfriend with it who lives in a whole other city and doesn't put it in a little case or anything like that, just puts a ring in an envelope? Is that just like the most manipulative thing in this movie, or is there just so many manipulative things that it's hard to rank them?
I can't even have anything for that. I don't. That made no sense to me.
Why does a Greek superheroine have an Israeli accent, and why does it sound like she's reading from cue cards off screen?
Because she was reading from cue cards off screen.
How
and because
bad?
She's Israeli.
Yeah, they've obviously been hiding her speaking dialogue in the teaser trailer for Wonder Woman and the trailers for this movie. How bad is her performance going to be in Wonder Woman based on what you've seen here?
This is what I said in our podcast, that people are really jazzed up about Wonder Woman's appearance. And they're like, oh, she's the best thing about the Murderverse. I was like, she's really not in this movie a lot.
No.
Right?
She's not. She doesn't speak a lot.
And she does,
and very pointedly does not speak very often.
Yeah, I'm worried.
Are they just going to have her walking around not talking, letting all the guys talk around her for the movie?
That's
is that what's going to happen?
Man. That's what I'm saying. I said it in the movie, but people are all on board with the Wonder Woman stuff. She looks fantastic, though. She looks terrific.
She's a very pretty woman. She's an attractive woman. She never bulked up the way that they try to claim that she would. They sell it through the CGI act. She got some of the better CGI moments, even though it's still clearly CGI.
I am curious, though, how they're going to handle her getting beaten up. Because at some point, she's going to have to be beaten up by a foe.
And so she's not so pretty anymore.
It's going to be very, like, you know, Doomsday didn't, like, pound on her, mm-hmm. right? Like, at some point in her own movie.
That would actually have helped a lot, too, because that was one of the big things in the comics, was that everybody was getting stomped by Doomsday. And that's why you had to go to these extreme measures where Superman had to give his life to stop Doomsday, because he was the only person powerful enough, and he just had to dig in until they both killed each other, beating each other up. And yet in this movie, you've got just two other heroes running around, and they didn't look bad at all. They didn't look for the Batman's costume wasn't even torn. Also, Ben Affleck, I thought, was actually a pretty good looking Bruce Wayne. He was the first Bruce Wayne I've ever seen that looked like he would then climb into a Batman suit and be able to kick butt. But that has got to be, I think that's like the worst Batman suit of all time. I think of all the Batman suits, I was more intimidated by Adam West than this big rubber. He looked fat.
I like the suit. I don't like him in the suit because the CG is so bad. Well, it's all CG.
Yeah, and it pushes his face out, so he looks all like he's holding his breath all the time. I hated how it looked like his whole face was getting squeezed out like toothpaste out of the suit.
But like when the suit is in the canister when he's not wearing it, I think it looked cool.
Yeah, it looks fine until a human being is actually
in it. In it, and it's 2016 when this movie comes out, but he looks as slow as Mike Keaton did in the rubbery suit.
I mean, it was better in the second big action sequence where he's going after Martha, but that everything about the dream sequence, he did not move well in that at all. He just looks fat. He looks bulky. This is a guy who's in great shape. They need to get him one of those Captain America suits on.
And I thought it was a huge mistake not updating the Frank Miller armor.
Yeah, that looked... And again, the fact that the only way that Batman could take on Superman was by becoming Iron Man.
But it was like a really bad... Like, it works in Dark Knight Returns because he cobbles it together, basically. But in this movie, he's still kind of at the peak of who he is. Yeah. Maybe just about to go on the downturn. And I think he'd come up with something better than that armor instead of the big Frankenstein boots clunking around.
In the history of Western cinema, has there ever been a more annoying performance than Lex Luthor in this movie? Can you think of any other movie?
Yeah. I can tell you right now, and it's a Superman movie. Who was the like Lex Luthor's son or nephew? It was Superman.
John Cryer?
Yeah.
In Superman 4?
Yeah.
Not as bad as...
That's not true.
Superman.
That's not true.
No, I disagree.
Okay, maybe
I think
not.
That this is... Because for starters, John Cryer's only in that movie so much, and he's still just Lex Luthor's nephew, but this guy's supposed to be Lex Luthor. He is so irritating. How could people even like perform with him? Because he had to read those lines more than once. He had to do those weird quirks and ticks and stuff over and over again in front of other actors and film people. How could nobody take him aside and say, oh my God, dude, you're going to ruin your career with
because
this.
That's because
Jesse Eisenberg, this is a career ender. This is such a bad performance.
You know, the story.
Nobody's ever going to forget how terrible this was.
The story was that he came in to audition for Jimmy Olsen.
Was it Jimmy Olsen?
Yes. He came in to audition for Jimmy Olsen, and Snyder was like, that's our Lex Luthor. So look at Zack Snyder. Zack Snyder was the one that turned Lex Luthor into the teenage Silicon inherited billionaire, Silicon Valley weird tech kid who shoots, you know, who has a basketball court in the lobby of his building and shoots hoops and stuff.
Yeah. Ding, 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 ding. That's the sound of the end of this movie. Is this guy saying ding over again?
I don't know. Nothing we've talked about in this podcast are we the first ones to point this out. Everything you've mentioned has been brought up and is not good. But you liked it, you said.
No, I didn't say I liked it. I said that it wasn't as terrible as I was expecting. It was tolerable. With the exception of Jesse Eisenberg. When Jesse Eisenberg is on screen, I had to I wanted to close my ears. I close my eyes off times, I put my hands to my head and was like, oh my God, no. There is no, why is this happening?
There is no way you can call a 3-hour movie we just sat through tolerable.
It was tolerable with the exception of him. All the stupid stuff they did.
No, you're being contrary.
I thought that Snyder's direction was actually surprisingly solid for the most part when he doesn't fetishize murder scenes and stuff. It was a decent looking movie. The
fetishizing murder scenes is like 3/4 of this 3-hour movie that you just said you could easily tolerate without.
I didn't say easily tolerate. I said it was tolerable. It was definitely better than the Neon Demon and Sucker Punch.
Okay.
We got a social media infection in a seedy motel room from Adam Black Moon, Ali Bats, Dr. Ange, and Lobs. Coffee and Comics Blog. Darren and Ruth Sutherland. Dr. G, Nerdologist. Joseph Crawford. Carl Disley. Keith G. Baker. Michael Bailey. Nethead. Professor Riptide. Rob at Speculum Fight. Ryan Daly. Scott Bachman. Silver and Gold Podcast. Stella Batgirl to Oracle. Sinet alias Scarecrow. Trekker Talk. Too Dangerous for a Girl tweeted. Is it a call-in show? Call is in the amniotic membrane enclosing a fetus. Because rebirth. Martin likes obstetric puns. The door opens. The room winces. The housekeeper comes in without a warning. A nice squint at the muscular motel lady. Say hey, good morning. She jumps. Her keys jingle. She leaves as quick as she came in and I roll over and taste the pillow with my grin.
The preceding program is a nonprofit fan production. Any copyrighted materials contained therein are believed borrowed under fair use with no copyright infringement intended. Please feel free to leave comments at the Rolled Spine Productions WordPress blog. You can also send us Twitter comments through the Rolled Spine Podcast Twitter. Thank you for listening.